What to look for in former inhabitants and winter visitors. Thoreau was an avid student of local history. He scoured records, interviewed elderly residents, and imagined himself an archaeologist at ruins, foundations, chimney bases, wells, and cellar holes. His friend and first biographer, Sanborn, notes that historically, the road running past the pond was the abode of denizens who rather shunned publicity, like the freed slaves of the 18th century, and white persons who had an affinity more than normal for ardent spirits. So, this chapter is sort of a lineage. Thoreau acknowledging the spirit of neighbors now gone, by proximity and intention, his own place in the story, and the contributions of intrepid winter visitors by way of his own residence. Thoreau relates himself to these departed denizens when he says, "I encountered many a blustering and nipping wind, and when the first has smithed me on the cheek, on one cheek, heathen as I was, I turned to it the other also." Well, of course, this refers to Christ's instruction in the book of Matthew. There's another interesting layer. Kramer notes an 1860 journal entry where Thoreau says, "As in old times, they who dwelt on the heath remote from towns were backward to adopt the doctrines which prevailed there, and were therefore called heathen in a bad sense, so we dwellers in the huckleberry pastures, which are our heathen heath lands." Kramer continues with this note. This came from his reading in Richard Chenevix's Trenches, The Study of Words, in which the term heathen is traced back to the introduction of Christianity in Germany, where the wild dwellers on the heaths longest resisted the truth of the church. Trust Thoreau to call himself a heathen and refer to the New Testament all in one sentence. There is a logic to it. He claims his independence with a nod to the authority of Christianity. It also points to himself as someone qualified to live in these parts, formerly inhabited with such colorful characters. And remember, mythological systems do like to trace their lineage. A few historical notes. The pranks of a demon, not distinctly named in old mythology, who acted a prominent and astounding part in our New England life, this refers to rum. Many New England families became wealthy by way of rum production in what Kramer calls the slavery triangle. West Indies molasses was taken to New England to make rum, which was shipped to New Guinea to purchase slaves, who were taken to the West Indies and traded for molasses. In other words, many in the North were complicit in a prominent and astounding industry to perpetuate slavery. David Nance Gondibert was an unfinished epic poem tedious enough to put Thoreau to sleep, along with Chalmers' poetry collection. You may recall he preferred listening to frogs. Thoreau did suffer from bouts of sleepiness, especially during his time on Staten Island. Shall we quiz you on the identity of his visitors? By now you know the poet. The woodchopper who left the scent of his pipe would be the Canadian Alec Thieron. The loquacious farmer would have been Edmund Hosmer. While cracking a nut may be literal, it also refers to addressing a conundrum. The last of the philosophers, "I do not see how he can ever die, nature cannot spare him," is the loyal Bronson Alcott. And the one other with whom I had solid seasons is certainly Emerson. The closing allusion to the Vishnu Purana in an old English ballad, The Children in the Wood, weave a sense of mythos and mystery. These pretty babes with hand in hand went wandering up and down, but never more could see the man approaching from the town. Other notes. If a family had no possessions of value to pay a debt, a sheriff would attach a chip of wood to something in the house. And a pumpkin pine is an eastern white pine that can acquire a yellowish color.